Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a great docket for you, so let's get to it. First on the docket, the attorneys for Ghislaine Maxwell have officially filed their motion for a new trial. Next, will the South Dakota Attorney General be impeached? Remember his little driving incident that he had? An arrest in the Breonna Kuffer death. Alec Baldwin gets sued. And, well, wait till you hear this. Chandler Halderson remain silent, and then finally our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you get notification of when we put up new content or go live. And remember, if you can't watch us here on YouTube or Facebook, you can always listen to us by downloading Crime Talk with Scott Reich on your favorite podcasting app. Please do so. All right, let's vent just a little bit, okay? Had a quick court appearance. It was set for 9 o'clock. The courtroom, you could actually normally go in and set it off the record if you had your client there at 8:15. So who shows up at 8:15? That's right, this guy. Then you find out there's a new judge in that courtroom. And that courtroom, oh, they're not doing anything. No, off the record. It's all on the record, sir. Yes, thank you. So the matter was then set at 8 o'clock. So I'm figuring I'm only 45 minutes early. I will make productive use of that time, which I do so. It's 9 o'clock rolls around. 9:15 rolls around, 9:30 rolls around, no judge. The court comes out at 9:40, ladies and gentlemen. If I was 40 minutes late, guess what? I'd probably be held in contempt. If my client showed up 40 minutes late, they could possibly be issued a warrant for their arrest for failure to appear, for not being timely. But if the courts do it, somehow it's okay. I just don't understand it, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, I missed my 9:45 Zoom call because I was still standing at the podium because the little recorder had to be reset as we were standing at the podium, which is the official record. So I missed that call. And let's just say that started the whole morning off. And now when I get done with this, I'm immediately going to the airport, jump in Crime Talk 1, fly to Dallas for a meeting. It's the first flight since Crime Talk 1's come out of annual. So basically, I'm a test pilot today. What could possibly go wrong? All right. Let's get to the docket today. First, today is Thursday, January 20th. Let's get to it. Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys have requested that her conviction be overturned and that the case be retried. Now, in the filings that went in late yesterday afternoon, Ms. Maxwell's attorney said that they had filed a motion to for a retrial under seal. But they referenced juror number 50, known as Scotty David, who revealed that he failed to disclose that he had been sexually abused as a child. Now, the attorneys wrote in the letter to the judge, for the reasons set forth in the motion, we request that all submissions pertaining to juror number 50 remain under seal until the court rules on the motion. Now, Ms. Maxwell and her defense team are hoping for a retrial after David revealed that he told the jury during deliberations of his own experience about being the victim of a sexual abuse when he was a child. He stated that he didn't reveal his history during jury selection because he had not been asked that question specifically. When it was pointed out that question 48 of the 50 questions that they had to answer asked exactly that, he then claimed that he did not remember. But he stated that he answered all the questions honestly. Well, the prosecutors have also requested that the United States District Court Judge Allison Nathan conduct an inquiry regarding the juror's statements, and the prosecution will have until February 2nd to respond to the government's motion. Now, of course, the government will probably say, oh, no harm, no foul. And they've all but said, hey, if they just go along with the verdict, we won't go forward with those perjury charges, which is frankly the least of Ms. Maxwell's concerns. I have stated this. I have a real problem when jurors don't disclose biases in voir dire. That's the whole purpose of it. Hell, that's the name, voir dire. It's a French word for meaning speak the truth, so that at the end of the day, win, lose, or draw, everybody gets a fair trial. But if the jurors aren't being absolutely honest about where they stand and how they're going to try the case, guess what? Somebody's not getting a fair trial. And Whether you like it or not, Miss Maxwell should get a new trial. Shame, but we only have to blame juror number 50. Now, don't we? He's the one to blame. I would impose costs against this guy. All right. Remember the South Dakota Attorney General got in a little bit of a driving incident? Well, he is basically being investigated by the South Dakota legislature. They've put a panel together to decide whether impeachment proceedings are appropriate. Now, the Attorney General, Jason Ravsborg, it's alleged that he knew that he had run over and killed a man. And the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation, specifically Special Agent Arnie Rummel and Joe Arnez, interviewed the Attorney General twice after the fatal crash in 2020 and said that there was a very realistic possibility that he knew he had struck a person and actually saw the victim's body. As you may recall, the victim's glasses were in the car of the Attorney General. Now, the North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigations agents had been brought across the state line to assist the South Dakota authorities after the September 12 crash because the South Dakota Department of Criminal Investigation reports directly to the Attorney General, Mr. Ravsborg. Now, a few days after the crash, Ravsborg had asked staff in the DCI office what kind of information could be retrieved from his phone. The North Dakota Bureau of Criminal Investigation agents drove to the crash site the next day after Ravsborg, who returned to the area to return a car he had borrowed from the Hyde County Sheriff. That's right. The sheriff let him borrow his car to drive home, right? And then they come back the next day. The agents said that they felt Ravsborg knew almost immediately what happened. They also noted that the victim, Joe Beaver's DNA, was discovered on the windshield of Ravsborg's car, and his glasses were found inside the vehicle. Ravsborg has denied knowing that he hit that night, and when he called 911 after the crash, he first identified himself as the Attorney General and said that he had hit something and that it was in the middle of the road. Ravsborg said in a statement that he believed he had struck a large animal, possibly a deer. Well, on Wednesday, the Republican governor, Kristi Noem, who called on Ravsborg to resign and on the legislature to impeach him if he would not, was sharply critical of the Republicans on the House committee, who seemed to suggest they were more concerned with protecting the Attorney General than holding him to account. But with the criminal and the civil cases behind Mr. Ravsborg, he has remained in office, and indeed, he said he will seek a second term. Now, for the impeachment to proceed, the committee would have to recommend it to the full House, and if a majority of the members then vote to impeach Ravsborg, a trial would be held at the state Senate, where it would take 2/3 to convict him to be removed from office. This humble opinion of this non-South Dakota resident here would be that Mr. Ravsborg should just resign. He should have resigned way back when this accident took place. He is the top law enforcement officer in the state, and he didn't do the right thing. Logic does not seem to fit with the Attorney General's statement that he didn't know that he had hit something or someone and that the person was in the middle of the road. Well, it turns out that's not the case. The accident reconstruction shows that Mr. Beaver was walking near the side of the road and his DNA and his glasses were in the car. I think it's fair to say that the good Attorney General may be speaking with forked tongue, ladies and gentlemen. He should resign, and if he won't resign, they should impeach him. He is the highest law enforcement officer, and he needs to be held to a higher standard than everybody else. And I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, if that were you or me, that's right, you and I would not have received a misdemeanor charge like the Attorney General did, with basically a complete pass. Let me know what you think. I say impeach. All right, next on the docket, the Brianna Kufer matter. Los Angeles police have arrested the man they say fatally stabbed the UCLA student, Ms. Kufer, inside a furniture store in L.A. where she worked hours after offering a $250,000 reward. Sean Smith, 31, was arrested after an extensive manhunt across the region, and the Los Angeles Police Department confirmed Smith's arrest on Twitter. He was recognized as he was waiting for a bus near the Fair Oaks Avenue on Colorado Boulevard. And the LAPD said surveillance video showed Smith entering multiple businesses in the hours leading up to the Kufer killing. And on Tuesday, the department released video showing a man inside a nearby 7-Eleven store about 30 minutes after. Before his arrest, Smith had been seen in Pasadena, Santa Monica, West Hollywood, and other locations around Southern California. Now, Cooper's death has obviously shaken and shocked a lot of people in the community. And the politicians say that this week that they made a motion for the city to offer a $50,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and prosecution of Ms. Cooper's killer. Now, the amount was increased by $250,000 by contributions to the community. Now, as you may recall, the suspect in this particular case, although we're given presumption of innocence, guess what? Out on a very low bond, regardless of the fact that he had an extensive criminal history. You keep going out there, LA law enforcement, well, prosecutors. We're blaming the prosecutors and judges. Prosecutors and judges. I think the police are doing a good job. It's just the prosecutors and the judges letting everybody out there. Next in the docket, Alec Baldwin. You know, most people wouldn't even have talked about Alec Baldwin, but he got that whole thing going on in Santa Fe where, you know, he did shoot a woman. Well, it gets better. This guy has some serious impulse control issues. While the family of a Marine killed in Afghanistan during the Biden administration's chaotic troop withdrawal has sued Alec Baldwin for defamation, claiming that the actor falsely accused the serviceman's grieving relatives of being insurrectionists. Renee McCollum, 20, of Wyoming, was one of the 13 U.S. service members killed in August 26 bombing outside the Abbey Gate of the Hamid Karzai International Airport, where they were processing would-be evacuees to be flown out of Afghanistan following the Taliban takeover. Now, according to the suit filed, after McCollum's death, Baldwin found one of the Marine sisters, Royce, on Instagram and sent her a check for $5,000 for his widow, Jenna Creighton, and her newborn. The actor told Royce that the check was a tribute to the fallen soldier. But then this month, Baldwin accused Royce of taking part in last year's riot in the nation's capital and called her an insurrectionist after she posted a photo of Instagram that she took on January 6, 2021 at the Washington Monument in D.C. Now, Royce attended a demonstration in support of then-President Trump, but was not involved in the riots and was never accused of any crimes. Baldwin reportedly wrote on Royce's Instagram post from his account, "Are you the same woman I sent the dollars for your sister's husband who was killed during Afghanistan?" Question mark. Baldwin wrote in a private message to Royce, "When I sent the dollars for your late brother out of real respect for his service to this country, I didn't know you were a January 6th rioter." Baldwin reposted Royce's photo on his personal Instagram account that has 2.4 million followers and said she was involved in the January 6th protests. This is all according to the complaint. Baldwin's message Royce saying, "Your activities resulted in the unlawful destruction of government property, the death of law enforcement officers, and the assault on the certification of the presidential election. I reposted your photo. Good luck." It did not take long before Royce was bombarded with hateful and aggressive messages from Baldwin's followers, including some telling her to get raped and die, and that your brother got what he deserved. People then began sending hateful and threatening messages to the widow, Cheyenne, according to the lawsuit, some comparing them to ISIS members or even Nazis. Baldwin's conduct was negligent and reckless, according to the complaint, and he should have known that making the allegations he did against the plaintiffs to his millions of followers would cause plaintiffs harm. All according to the lawsuit. Either he knew what would happen and he wanted it to happen, or he just didn't think about it. The plaintiffs, McCollum's sister, Royce, and Cheyenne, and his widow, are seeking $25 million in damages for the alleged defamation, invasion of privacy, negligence, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Now, obviously, this matter has to play out in the court system. I don't think they're going to get $25 million unless you get the right jury. But this is a teachable moment, ladies and gentlemen. Just because you say it on the internet in a moment of anger doesn't remove somebody from civil responsibility. And if you're actually spewing true hate words, actually causing hate crime like violence upon people, you can actually be charged criminally. So whether you like Alec Baldwin or not, you think he's a good guy or a total jerk, good lesson. Let it go sometimes. And oh, by the way, just, well, yeah, let it go. Let it go. Little impulse control is good. You see that a lot doing criminal defense work, that, you know, people that have impulse control issues, strong temper, usually wind up in the criminal justice system. Just saying. Let me know what you think. On to our next Alec Murdaugh. Well, you know, obviously we've talked about him. He's been behind bars since being arrested in Florida on October 14th of last year, and he's being held on that $7 million bond. And the judge denied his bond request, but his attorneys have said that he is just a poor pauper while he's been in custody, and he'd like to, you know, get basically a new pair of underwear. That's how broke he is, but he just simply can't afford it. But the attorney should know in today's world that just about everybody can get information regarding, well, people that deposit money on a defendant's books while they're in custody. And in this particular case, there's been several people and family members who have been depositing money on Mr. Murdaugh's books so that he can live quite comfortably while in custody. Those include his attorney, Jim Griffin, his sister, Lynn Getz, his mother, Elizabeth Murdaugh, his brother, John Murdaugh, and his other brother, Randy Murdaugh. Now, the detention center says there's no limit on how much money can be deposited into an inmate's account, but he can only spend $60 a week. Now, he's been spending apparently about $59 a week on what, you might add? Well, commissary. That's right. That's a little store that's basically run inside. So those three meals a day that the jail provides to you, sometimes they're not the most appetizing meals you could possibly imagine. So people like to buy commissary, which is like going to a 7-Eleven and buying soups and candy bars and things of that nature. And if you have a lot in your commissary, you can also trade it for favors while you are in custody. So $59 actually goes a really long way when you think that a pack of, when the jail only charges 35 cents for salt, pepper, and 13 cents for mayonnaise. You know, things to make life a little more comfortable for you. You can also get, you know, like I said, snacks like Cheez-Its, M&Ms, and all rather inexpensive, although expensive in the jail world. But the amount of money that he's spending is quite significant. So he's living comfortably. So I don't think anybody should be too concerned about Mr. Alec Murdaugh in custody. Now, on to a more serious note regarding Murdaugh. Remember I said there'll be more cases coming? Guess what? A woman by the name of Pamela Pinky learned that her former attorney, Alex Murdaugh, well, allegedly stole nearly $1 million from her family following the car accident that killed her son, Hakeem. She had hired Mr. Murdaugh to handle Hakeem's wrongful death lawsuit and says she is going through a second phase of pain because of what Murdaugh did to her family. Back in 2011, Hakeem's ventilator was apparently left unplugged at the Pruitt Health North Hospital. Four staff noticed, and he died later at the age of 21. Now, Justin Bamberg is representing at least eight victims of Alex Murdaugh allegedly stole money from, and says that there are several similarities between the case and the case involved the Satterfield family. Pamela says that she just wants to know what happened so that the family can move on. She says that she does not have any hate in her heart toward Mr. Murdaugh. She says that she's forgiven him, but will never forget what he did. Yeah, the similarity is he stole their money, allegedly. But he's all but admitted to that. But the reality of it is he stole their money. He didn't give an accurate accounting of the funds from the settlement. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm telling you, I bet they're just scratching the surface. Chandler Halderson. Yeah, that's right. He did not testify in his murder trial in his own defense, and the defense team for the 23-year-old man accused of killing and dismembering his parents rested their case Thursday without calling any witnesses. Now, on Thursday morning, court went through a series of questions with Halderson, referred to as a colloquy, to confirm that he understood that he has a right to testify and not to testify. In short answers, Halderson said he understood his right and chose not to testify. Now, over 7 days, prosecutors laid out their case against Chandler that he murdered his parents, Bart and Krista Halderson, on July 1st in their Windsor home. He initially tried to dispose of the bodies, they argue, the prosecution does, by burning them in the family fireplace before scattering dismembered body parts across Dane County. Halderson is charged with two counts, each of first-degree intentional homicide, mutilation of a corpse, hiding a corpse, and falsifying information about a missing person. Closing arguments is scheduled for this afternoon. So, Mr. Halderson, he has an absolute right to remain silent. That's his constitutional right to do so. And the court goes through that colloquy to make sure that he understands that he can testify even if his attorneys don't want him to, and that that choice is his and his alone. Why, you might add? Some people have been known, once they lose on appeal and they lose their case, is they'll file an ineffective assistance claim and say that the attorneys told me not to testify and I didn't know that I had the right to testify. And I would have testified in my own defense if I had had a new, if I have a new trial. And so the court said, fine, we'll fix that. We'll just have the court explain it to him so that the record is absolutely clear. I think that Halderson verdict should be rather quick, ladies and gentlemen. I give him maybe 5 hours. That may include lunch as well. But it's going to be a quick verdict, and I think it's going to be guilty. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. A tourist in Key West, Florida, set fire to the landmark buoy, the southernmost point in the United States. A video taken to the scene of the crime has gone viral on the island, and a bartender was able to recognize the suspect as a man who stiffed him at his bar on a tip on New Year's Eve. The bartender, Cameron Brody, knew he served him and that he used a card so his name would be on the slips. The bartender and his manager were able to match the credit card receipts with the timestamp video of the suspect, and the police were able to identify the suspect as 21-year-old Skylar Ray Jacobson of Henrietta, Texas, and 22-year-old David Perkins of Leesburg, Florida. Perkins and Jacobs both face charges of criminal mischief with damage over $1,000. Perkins has turned himself into the Florida Key West Police, and Jacobson is expected to turn himself in as well. Ladies and gentlemen, what's the moral of that story? Well, first, don't damage other people's things. It's simple. Just like don't steal other people's things. Don't take things without their property. Don't damage other people's property. But the real moral here is be nice. Tip the wait staff, ladies and gentlemen. Don't stiff the bartender. If that guy had just given a regular tip, no one would probably have cared twice about it. But he knew him, and he said, screw this guy. He stiffed me. I'm going to stiff you. All right. Thanks for watching. That's all we have, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go catch a plane. Well, fly a plane. Go to Dallas for a meeting. Not sure I'll be able to do a show for tomorrow, but I'm sure we'll come up with something for you. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.